All right, well, you got all the chandeliers and candelabras installed in the studio?
No. No. No.
All right, Michelle from Tennessee. This is episode 103 from On Catch Fire from a long time ago. We're catching up with season one after we did season two.
Yep.
Are you having fun going back and rewatching season one?
I really am. And, you know, I went back and watched it. I watched it when it first aired week to week. And then I went back and I watched it again as we started these, what, 2 months ago or a little more, and then we got really busy with our new Halt and Catch Fire and our new True Detective, so we kind of let this catch-up slide, and so I'm going back and watching it even again, and it's funny because I've made notes and stuff on it, and I like seeing how my ideas stay the same and or change as it goes along. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying doing it. What about you?
Well, we said, or I just said 2.5 years ago. It's really only June of 2014, so it's a year and a couple months ago, for 103 High Plains Hardware. Yeah, I like them. I liked this series the first time, and I like talking about it. And I like because I like the series, I like the entertainment aspect of it. Some of the things I'm critical of in the middle of season one that seem a little silly. You know, like any new show, this is only the third episode of this show. So they're at that point in the time of the show, they're still trying to find their footing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time all the places and players that were set up in episodes one and two are kind of put in motion. But they still don't quite have the clear pathways yet, I don't think, towards their goal of what they end up doing in the season. And so there's some awkward moments that happen in this 103. But here's the speed review, Michelle. We'll do the speed review and then we can talk about it.
Okay.
So IBM has raided Cardiff Electric, and so the Cardiff is forced to downsize. And Joe tells all the rest of the remaining engineers that the company's going to have this new PC that's magically under 15 pounds by the end of the year. And all the engineers fight back against that and just say it's not possible. It's too, you know, that's incredibly light. It's impossible.
Right.
And what's a MacBook Air now? Like 1 pound or 14
or
ounces?
Less. Yeah.
So Joe goes out to raise money from his Beck East. He has his contacts, but Cardiff fights back against Joe on this and says Bosworth's going to handle all the money, all the finances. Joe's kind of the creative technical designer. And so they set up a meeting with one of their old investors or friends that they know that has money, Lulu. So we're going to hear about her. And they have a dinner party with Lulu, and she offers $10 million for 80% of the company in the PC project. I guess it's not the company, Cardiff, but the PC project part of Cardiff.
Right. I would guess. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know Nathan wouldn't give up the whole company to her, but yeah.
So Joe's upset about that, thinks the deal stinks, and has sex with Lulu's husband or boyfriend. Now Gordon's trying to meet those design goals of the 15-pound computer and finds trouble getting there, and the engineers fight back. And Gordon fires, I guess, one of the engineers. I'm trying to remember from my notes here.
He fires everybody. Gordon fires like 46 people, and then he ends up even firing his next-door neighbor.
Yeah, so, Brian.
Yeah.
So Bosworth kicks Cameron out of the office. She's living in the office at this point. Tells her she can work as much as she wants, but she can't live there. And she gets her first paycheck and blows it on a party with some of her crazy friends that
they're not even her friends.
Street
she
people.
She just meets them, yeah.
Well, she knew them from somewhere, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think she just walked out because she thought they were going to mug her, was the idea I got.
Well,
yeah, because they introduced themselves to her right there. She thought they were going to mug her.
The other thing we learn about Cameron is that she has sex with Joe to break through her creativity blocks, I think is the implication. when she gets stuck on a point in her code, she has sex and it kind of creates a, gets her to be creative again. So that's the blow through recap. Now we can talk about anything we want to talk about in the scene. Okay. So what did you have any first impressions about High Plains hardware, High Plains Drifter, Michelle?
I get really annoyed at Cameron and the way she acts in these beginning episodes. I remember again what I disliked about season one. The more I see of her going through these, I don't even know what to call it, and just having her little temper tantrums and stuff, it's so unappealing. So unappealing. And it's just hard to watch. I mean, I've got daughters. I've got grown daughters. And it's just a really hard thing to watch to see her doing that. And I know that you've kind of taken up for her before in that vein that she is a creative type and all that. But I know it aggravates you as well, too. You said that, too. But I had forgotten how much. So I guess the main thing I took away from these particular episodes is that this is where Cameron really starts her relationship with Boz, which ends up being a really mutually beneficial, looks like so far, relationship. And she really did grow. They really did grow the character. As we've gotten into season two and you see how she is, it's really different than this fit pitching, tantrum throwing child, for the most part.
Yeah, not quite yet. She still is that person. She grows a lot by the end of season one, but that's kind of one of my criticisms. Is they're heavy-handed with her still, pretty much at this early stage. In 103.
Heavy-handed, what do you mean?
Well, she's just too immature. Overly.
Oh, absolutely.
Overly. I mean, and the theme of the story, the actress, you know, the role of her role in the story is too heavy-handedly immature.
Yeah, and completely directionless. And I understand that that's kind of what they're trying to lead us toward, but I completely agree with you, because she, I mean, the tattoo, she has some street person tattoo in her arm. I mean, really, she's just has no forethought to anything. It's like she can't think beyond the next 2 seconds, it seems like.
This episode was more Donna and Gordon-centric, I think, though, than Cameron-centric.
Well, yeah, and I actually may be getting into the next one. I'm not even sure. I watched them back-to-back again last night. But yeah, and I think it shows... Oh, I despise Gordon as a husband, for the most part, in this episode.
You were married to him?
No.
Well, Gordon's greatest fear is getting... Gordon's greatest fear is... imparted on other characters. Like, his greatest fear, I think, is getting fired from Cardiff. That's why he's always towed the line. And Brian is like that now. This guy, he ends up firing. I don't know if he does it in 3 or 4. My notes blur together too. But Brian doesn't want to do anything different. He wants to toe the line and keep his engineer job. And Gordon has to break this toe the line policy, or otherwise he's never going to grow and try any of these new things.
I know, Mike, but he won't kill the bird. He won't kill the bird. And that's just it. That's just the straw for me. I mean, come on. Be a husband. Be a man. Man up and go out there and do that.
What was the reason of the dying bird, do you think?
Oh.
What was the symbol? Why was it in the episode?
The only way I took it very literally, is that Donna had to do everything. She was having to be the father. She was having to be the mother. She was having to do everything, even the things that should have obviously been Gordon's responsibility. And she was really suffering blow after blow with this. And as she's standing outside at the end looking in the window, when Gordon has just said he's had a bad day, he actually does fire him in this episode, because they had just had the car accident and he walks home. And so he's got the gash on his head. And he says, I've had a bad day. I'm not going to handle this. And It was disgusting. That was ridiculous. And then she's staying outside with a shovel, not wanting to do this. And she looks in the window, and he's just standing there, like, drinking a beer.
Yeah, well, they're still trying to heavy-handedly, like, show these characters' personalities. So Donna's the take-care-of-business person. Gordon's the flimsy, floppy, wimpy husband person. Cameron's the wild card. You know, Joe's the go-getter,
manipulator.
Yeah. But I thought the bird might represent, like, the project. Like, the status, the current status of the project had to be killed to make it, to get into the next phase of the project.
Okay, that's good.
The bird wasn't just a Gordon not taking care of business. It was symbolic of something more meaningful, I think, in that.
Well, yeah, because it was dying the whole time.
Yeah, and their project was dying. It's too heavy. It's not going to be the right size. Nobody likes the challenge. It's got to be killed and reborn again. You know, and a bird is a good symbol of that. The whole phoenix bird from flames into new life and all that.
Yeah, but we also go back into, like you were talking about with Gordon and Donna, how he doesn't trust her. And he also doesn't trust himself. She comes up with this brilliant idea on how to fix this and actually make this idea work. And he scraps it because his neighbor engineer guy is like, oh, poo, poo, poo. You know, he just, and it's insulting to Donna and it's insulting to himself. And
well, he has no confidence. That's part of, you know, they're telling us who this guy is. Remember, this is just the third episode, so.
And it shows his weakness. And by the way, I'm griping about this, but not in a True Detective way. I really enjoyed watching this. It was one of those things that you really enjoy watching. It comes together really well. There's nothing bad about it, but just the bad things that you see about the characters are things that you just want to point out.
So Cameron wakes up at Cardiff to the vacuum cleaners, and we'll see more about this vacuum cleaner plot in the next episode. But I guess she's on the couch upstairs. She's not really downstairs in her little basement cubbyhole. She's in the kind of the lobby or the main floor of the Cardiff office. It looks more comfortable where she's sleeping on that couch than in her shitty little room in the basement. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. And then we see Joe getting up in the morning at his place naked with all his electronics and his scars and scratches and stuff that are still somewhat mysterious across his chest. Cameron's stuck on the bio. She's frustrated with rewriting and getting this BIOS to work. And Gordon is firing people. So they do a lot of these jump cuts really quickly. Gordon's firing the 46 people you talked about, but he's really bad at it. In fact, the guy he's currently talking to as he's firing him doesn't even know that he's getting fired. And it's the next guy that comes in who knows what's up and has already written his own reference letter.
Yeah. And he's mad and you can't blame him. But let me ask you, they're firing these guys. I just want to make sure that I've got it right in my mind. They're firing like the majority of Cardiff at this point. And they're doing this to conserve money, to put all of their resources into this project. Is that correct?
Well, plus IBM has stolen, if we remember from either one or two, probably two, episode two, IBM's lowered their prices and stolen away some of their big contracts.
Right.
They don't have the sales to keep all these people on board. So they're just making their budget meet. You know, they have to cut costs because they don't have the sales anymore.
Okay. And this is why they don't have the money to fund the project, too, and why they're going to venture capitalists to get the money to fund the project.
Well, it's probably partly, yeah. Okay. Any new project is going to cost more than before you had that new project, going to cost the company more.
Well, and this is very expensive from what they're talking about, too. This is not just a little thing. This is a big, big thing.
So that was the first commercial break. And by the way, they have a really cool break sequence, their show's intro graphic, which is that red, it looks like a chip getting made. It's all red and circuits are flowing. And it's really kind of cool as the credits and the visual of that comes up.
I think it's very 80s looking. It's almost like a modem sound.
It's cool, though. It looks very cool.
I love it. Yeah.
So we come back, and Joe's now got the portability idea. We told him he's already told them about the half the price, half the weight. Right. Half the weight, half the price. Or no, twice the speed, half the price. This is where I stumbled before. Half the speed, half the price, twice the speed. And now he wants it, in addition to that, smaller. So he has a suitcase, and he wants to turn 28 pounds of what it currently is into this 15-pound suitcase.
Well, yeah, it's even just a briefcase. It's not even really like a suitcase. It's just small at the time, yeah.
And it's going to have two drives and a keyboard and be 15 pounds or under. And that's where everybody flips. Like, oh, engineers can't do this. Impossible. Gordon even says, you're breaking the laws of physics. Right. And so Joe says to Gordon, if you think that way, then I'm going to question these engineers that you've been. Is this the team of people you picked to do this, and nobody even believes it's possible? So that's kind of cool, insightful thing about Joe, is that Joe doesn't even know how to do it, but he's saying, figure out a way to do it. And of course, now in 2015, we know that there is a way to do it. We just didn't know how to do it at the time.
Right.
So the world needs people like Joe, even though he doesn't have the technical expertise to do it. He needs to question the status quo and introduce the possibility that it can be done.
And I think it's even beyond that. I think he sees it. I think he knows that it can be done. I don't think he's just throwing out. I mean, it's obviously very difficult ideas, but I think he knows this can be done. I don't think he's guessing at it.
I don't know. I disagree. I think people like Joe in this story are the people that their thoughts and wishes are broader than their grasp or longer than their grasp. It's like going to the moon. Hey, let's go to the moon. At the time, they didn't know they could do it. They thought they could probably do it, but they don't. You don't know. You know, you're reaching. It's reaching.
I don't know. I think some people can see it, and I think Joe could literally see it. I think that's what visionaries do, is they can see it. If back then Joe had said, we'll all walk around with a mini computer that's also a portable cell phone and be able to get on the internet that's wireless. Obviously, that would have been crazy thinking, but he's talking about cutting the weight in half, and he's talking about adding a keyboard to the computer and essentially putting it inside a briefcase so that people can carry it with them. And it's a big, big deal at that time. But I just think Joe could see it. I think he had the vision for it. But maybe we'll just have to agree.
So while Joe complains that these engineers are the knuckleheads you're going to pick and they all question whether you can do it, Gordon fires right back at him that, well, you just gutted my whole staff, so that's another reason why. So they're kind of going back and forth and fighting against each other. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Cameron's running around the office scavenging everything from the guys that just got fired, including bowling shoes from one guy, which she ends up dancing around the office in later. That's what I think. They made her too punky. Like she's got the Walkman, and she's the rocker little 20-year-old or whatever kid. And she's got to be a little bit more sophisticated than that, I think, at this point, to be writing this code and coming into work 15 hours a day. I don't know. It was a little too punky. She was a little too punky for me to believe it.
I completely agree.
All right, so now gets a little bit more technical, because not only is there speed and size considerations for this new project Joe wants them to do with the briefcase computer, but also the heat. And he's trying to find a name for this whole thing. And Skunk Works is already taken, because that was Steve Jobs' name for the Macintosh at the time.
I thought it was the name for the room that this stuff was built in.
Yeah, well, that's what they mean. Their little pirate little section of the company, Skunk Works or the Kill Room. The Kill Room, Gordon comes up with, I guess, sarcastically, like everybody close to this project is getting killed.
Right.
Maybe related more back to that little bird in the beginning. But now they go after the VC money, and they find out that some guy named Aaron Littlefield is visiting from New York. And Boz is afraid of this guy. So Boz is also afraid of his job status changing, I think.
Okay, is that what it is at this point? Is he afraid? Or Boz seemed to turn on this guy when this guy was talking about how he would have his hands in all of their finances. And Boz hasn't done anything with the finances yet. Is that right?
Well, I think this guy, any VC person coming in that's going to give you money is going to take control of part of the company. I think Boz is afraid of his control being compromised.
But it's not because he's done anything illegal.
No.
At this point.
No, it's just new people. You know, Boz is the right-hand man to Nathan Cardiff, and Here's this whole new idea, new money people, and it's a threat to him and his job. Yeah. Just like everybody else. It's like Gordon, it's a threat. This new thing's a threat. But his excuse is, I need to clear everything with Nathan. So Boz is afraid to make decisions and puts it off on clearing it with Nathan. And Boz, at this point, Boz has the funny line. They're talking all these financial terms, and Boz says, I remember when they used to call it money, venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
So now we see a little bit more about Donna at Texas Instruments, and she's working with an old fling from high school named Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And Hunt is another person with the status quo. Status quo, I think, was a message in this episode. Hunt was a non-creative guy who towed the line and got really high up in the company because he was kind of a company man. He wasn't a free thinker. He wasn't a creative type. He was just just a good functionary manager, yeah. So I think that's a good comparison between him and Gordon. Donna's starting to admire Hunt for that part of him and disdain that part of Gordon. The Gordon that started Symphonic and the Gordon that's going on crazy garage night trips with Joe. And it looks like she's being very attracted to Hunt because of all this.
Well, and he's paying attention to her. I mean, he's talking to her. He's asking her questions about herself. And stuff like that. He's given her some attention that she's not getting from Gordon.
So we see Cameron call Joe's office and gets the secretary, and then she just hangs up on the secretary. What do you think that was? Was that the sex for creativity thing in motion?
Well, I didn't think so at the time, when I first saw it. But yeah, I think after we see it later, maybe. But can we just talk about that for a minute? Because is that a thing?
Well, I think they're trying to make it a point in this series.
I'm just wondering if that's like a real thing. I'm not the most creative person in the whole wide world, I'll be the first to say.
Well, maybe you're not having enough sex.
Maybe not. Okay. I'm just wondering if that would help.
Well, I guess it probably could, but I think they're certainly making a point of it in this show.
Okay.
I mean, it's very connected that she gets stuck. She's frustrated. She calls Joe. She can't get Joe. She's more frustrated. He goes down there or she comes up to his house or whatever, and then she has a breakthrough. It's pretty clear that they're making it a part of the story.
Does it have to be Joe?
Seems like it does. She doesn't have sex with any of those street people that she has in her hotel party.
I know. I don't know.
But anyway, she doesn't get through to Joe. She's frustrated, hangs up. We go back to Littlefield and his VC deal. He wants to know the marketing strategy, Michelle. And Joe has this big, sophisticated marketing. And Boz fights with him on that and just says, no, we want to go door-to-door, county fairs, mom-and-pop stores.
Yeah.
And I want to get out in the world and breathe me some air. Pretty basic, like non-creative and slow as hell molasses way of marketing.
But he doesn't mean that. He's doing nothing but just derailing this investment.
And maybe, but I don't know. I think.
No, he did that on purpose. That was so done on purpose.
But he did go door to door at one point with frickin' Mutiny. He went door to door to sell online gaming.
Right.
Come on.
Right.
I could see Boz at the booth at the county fair trying to sell.
I could too, but he was definitely, I really took that because that's actually even what I made notes about is that how he was totally derailing this. He didn't want it to happen. He knew the guy was not going to be into that, and so that's how he handled it.
Well, but that's based on what he thinks of when he thinks of marketing. Boss would be more likely to go to the county fair, and Joe would be more likely to do some trick that he pulls in episode 4, get a writer in and cause a problem and fix the problem in front of him. Joe is way more creative, and Boz is way more traditional.
Absolutely, he is. But I really think Boz was that was overkill in what he was saying. I think Boz would be willing to go door to door, do anything he had to, like we see later on. But I just thought it was trying to derail the project.
He'd be willing to because that's what he does. he's just old school, and Joe's new school, I think.
He is, but he's not that much of a doof. He's a good businessman, Boz is.
So Gordon's team is working on the PC, and we find that there's a rule now that Cameron can't talk to Gordon. There's a no communication rule.
Yeah, they had set that in place. That had something to do with IBM and...
Right, the rule of the code and stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to do these podcasts when I've seen episode 1 and 2 probably 4 or 5 months ago now. It's hard to remember what happened in 2, and here we are in 3. Yeah. But they have this no communication rule, and we see Donna's mom bring in the electronic Japanese gravestone for the bird. Jeez. But it's a dog's gravestone named Bowser. It's a nice thought, but... An electronic gravestone.
Yeah, that plays like that. What was it?
Some pirate.
Oh, I thought it was that. Dum-da-dum.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. So do you think that was a real product for your pet dog back in the 80s?
I would be willing to bet it was.
Probably, yeah. So this is the first sign of discord between Gordon and his mother-in-law. She talks because she starts talking up Hunt's wife and Hunt and how Hunt was dreamy and is dreamy. And she complains right to Donna that she's disappointed that Donna didn't connect with Hunt. So she's admiring Hunt and disdainful of Gordon.
Well, she says Gordon needs to do the dishes sometimes too.
Pretty heavy. Yeah, but she just doesn't like Gordon.
I know. Yeah, well, I don't know if she doesn't like him, but I think she probably thinks he's not good enough for her daughter, would be my guess.
So if he does the dishes, he'll be good enough for her?
No, he won't.
All right, so Nathan, Joe, and Boz now. Nathan says he doesn't – this is interesting for me, from Nathan. He doesn't blame Joe either way.
Joe told Boz that he had already gotten permission from Nathan to do this, and he hadn't. He hadn't. And this is what we're seeing here is Joe is talking to Nathan at that bar restaurant thing, and Nathan tells him he didn't blame him for doing that, for essentially lying and trying to get Boz to do what he feels like it's the best thing to do.
Being manipulative, trying to get a new idea, being essentially ruthless in business to get a new idea across.
Right.
Nathan admires that, but he lays down the law. He's going to leave Boz in charge, and Joe's the creative guy. So please, Joe, make sure you understand that Boz is in charge. You're not in charge. Pretty important point. But it was a good managerial or ownerial move by Nathan, I thought. He made it clear what he expected of people.
He wants Joe to continue with his forward thinking as long as it doesn't cost him any money. I think Nathan puts Boz in a completely unwinnable situation. He puts this guy who is a steamroller in between himself and between Boz and the company, and he knows he essentially sacrifices Boz.
Well, I think he puts Boz in between the steamroller and him. He should put Joe in charge, probably, and just say Boz is your assistant. Boz will get things done for you, and Boz reports everything to me so I can have final say. But yeah, he shouldn't be putting Nathan above Joe because Joe's the steamroller and Nathan's – or I'm sorry. He shouldn't put Boz above Joe
because
Joe's the steamroller. Anyway, so he suggests this meeting with Lulu, Louise Lutherford, Lulu, and they have this meeting, I guess, since Boz, I guess in the meantime, doesn't Boz do something to blow up Joe's other plans for raising money? I think Boz is afraid of Joe taking over and getting in control of Cardiff or something at this point.
I just don't think Boz trusts him. He's caught Joe in lies. And he just doesn't trust that he's, I mean, the guy just got there.
Yeah, but Boz is also not wanting the new Littlefield VC guy to come in either. So Boz is just being scared of this change inside Cardiff.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about the Littlefield thing. That's what I said. I wasn't sure if maybe Boz had done something, cooked the books in some way or something that he didn't want these people to see prior to that, because there was something. He didn't want any outsiders in there, but he was okay with Lulu coming in, and I don't understand that. Why would he be okay with that?
Well, he might think
still retain control?
Yeah, 20% of... No, they wouldn't have control. She would have control, but he's thinking 20% of some new deal that we don't have to put any money into. She puts all the money into. That's a good deal. I still have Cardiff. You know, Nathan thinking this is reasonable. Because he's not losing anything. He's just getting 20% more. Joe's losing his idea. You know, Joe hates it because he's losing the creativity and the control of all the creative stuff related to it. Anyway, so back to Gordon and Donna. This is the focus of this episode, I think, is really Gordon and Donna. Gordon and Brian decide that portability just won't work. Portability just won't work. But Donna solves it. Donna draws it out and folds that paper in half and says, stack it. Don't put them all laid out next to each other. Stack it.
Right.
And then Donna gets in trouble for not getting her report done in time, and Hunt picks on her for that.
But he should. That's her job. And he's tried really hard to be good to her. And she's failing at her job again and again and again because Gordon's sucking all the life and time out of her. And that's fine. I mean, if he wants her to work with him or whatever and she agrees to do that, that's one thing. But if she's going to have a different job, she's got to do the job that she signed up to do. What if she were a doctor or a nurse or somebody who takes care of people? Could she let that stuff slip? I mean, you can't let stuff slip. When you take on an obligation, she's obligated to the place that's paying her paycheck.
Yeah, but people that are like this are rebels. You know, they buck the system and they put the resources into what they really want to do, and that's how they get stuff done. You can't toe the line for everybody and get magical creativity to work.
Are you talking about Donna or Gordon?
Anybody who's creative enough to start projects like this, Donna has to be. She has to sacrifice one thing to make the other thing fly. And
then she shouldn't take the paycheck from the first thing.
Maybe, but that's how it works. That's how the world works.
Well, and they show she's not in some other position that she could have a more negative effect on
people. They show that that's what she's willing to do, though. She is willing to work to help Gordon.
I think she feels bullied into it. I think she feels bullied, and I think she feels unappreciated when she does do it.
Well, she helps Gordon instead of doing this report, and they show Donna and Gordon really working well together. In fact, almost to a point of it becoming sexual between them. Like, they're turned on by working together on this new, exciting stuff.
They're definitely excited, I think. Yeah, I didn't really take it as a sexual excitement, but they're definitely having fun with it.
Well, in 4, when she helps fix the problem with Cameron's melted down discs, Gordon starts kissing her. She's like, "Yes, stop. We got to get this done." It's a turn on to them. That's what lights their fire, not their punching in on time and punching out of their regular jobs. Okay, so back to Cameron now. Late at night around the office, she's dancing and playing her Walkman and in the bowling shoes. And I guess Bosworth sees her and tells her that he knew that guy. But another interesting thing about this scene is Boz is staying late just to learn the computer system, the computer program. So he's really dedicated to this new challenge of him running with Joe and getting this new project developed, he's spending extra time to dive into it.
Right.
And so Gordon pitches this double layer stacking the boards idea, but doesn't tell the guy. This is one thing that's very dislikable about Gordon. He doesn't give Donna credit when she deserves it.
No, they asked him where he got the idea, and he said in his kitchen. So he didn't lie, but how despicable. That was bad.
So the neighbor guy, this guy Brian, I think his name is, Gordon and Donna's neighbor, who also works for Gordon, nixes the whole stackable idea that AMD and the other manufacturers won't do it.
He's horrible. He is horrible.
He's a deal killer. He's a dream killer. Yeah,
he is. He was horrible.
And Bosworth tells Cameron she can't live in the basement of Cardiff anymore, in the lobby or whatever, wherever that couch is. And she goes out, gets her first check, and buys a lot of clothes and junk food. Or did she buy clothes, or did she spend it all on Twinkies and junk food?
I'm pretty sure it was just Twinkies. I didn't see any clothing.
She went shopping for clothes, though. She was in some clothing-looking stores.
Not in this episode.
Oh, okay. This episode. Okay. So they're all struggling. They're all kind of struggling at this point with this expanding into this new product. And we see them all struggling. Gordon, Cameron, Joe getting everybody to believe in it, Bosworth having people invade his spot in the company. It's a struggle. I guess this meeting with Cameron on the street with these people was just a street meeting. I kind of made it that it was these punk tagger kids were her friends, but I don't know. Judy and Ajax are the names of those kids.
Yeah.
She's between worlds, though. She's like, am I in this old street gaming world with the video arcades, or am I in a new world of industrial creativity and creating a new product and business? And she's between.
They're mocking her because she has a job. They're calling her a sellout because she has a job, but they're happy to take her money.
Well, what do they have? Yeah.
Right.
That's what people do when they're jealous and insecure. They mock the new. I mean, maybe that's an interesting counterpoint to all this. They're saying, oh, you're stupid. You have a job. But they're jealous of that. So they wish they had, you make fun of what you don't have. I don't know. That thought just came to me. So we meet Lulu now. Lulu Lutherford, Louise Lutherford, and her money for the control of the company. And her boy is Travis. Is Travis the husband or the boyfriend?
I think he's the husband, right?
Yeah, maybe. It doesn't really matter. He's there with her. Her deal is 80% for $10 million, and then she offers and they don't jump on it. She kind of pulls it back. Well, go somewhere else and get $10 million then. And then Joe continues to just blow it up or try to blow it up. As Halt and Catch Fire does, they jump cut between a few different things. Donna tries to give Hunt this report, and he's on a different call. We go to Cameron's hotel party, where some guy tattoos himself and then tattoos Cameron.
With an ink pen?
What was
Is
the
that
tattoo?
What he was using? Yeah.
What was the tattoo on Cameron? It was a flag or something?
No, wasn't it like, what are those little, like, it was the computer sign, like, I don't know, like the rectangles in a line.
Like a circuit schematic?
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what
it was. I couldn't even tell what it is. It was a shitty tattoo. And it wasn't even completed. Like, she stopped him before it was finished.
Thank goodness.
But it looked ugly.
But wasn't it with an ink pen? Wasn't he using, like, an ink, like a Bic? And he's, like, cutting into, I don't know.
That's how you do it when you don't have any money.
Okay, I didn't know.
So Boz now and Lulu are talking about this investment thing, and Joe doesn't like it. She says, she brings up Sally Ride, now the innovation of new technology, and Joe's like, well, the Soviets have already done that twice. Your idea of what's new is not new to Lulu. So Joe's one-upping Lulu. Joe's got the upper hand in this argument with Lulu, I think.
In the argument, sure.
Not in the money, but yeah, he's a better debater/arguer than her. In fact, he says, I actually wrote this down. You're a bored, poisonous dilettante with time on our hands and no taste. You make it all about yourself, and that destroys companies. You make it about your friends and repel everybody else.
Yep.
He just rips her, man. That was killer.
Yeah, he does. And what does she do? She sits there and stares him down, and then she looks at Boz and goes, so do we have a deal?
Yeah.
And Boz goes, I'll get the papers signed up. So, I mean, they just completely castrate him, Joe, right there.
Well.
They attempt to. They bring out the knife to do it anyway.
So Cameron looks at her half tattoo in the mirror, or whatever percentage of completion it is, and then starts writing code on the mirror in lipstick.
Yeah, and marking it out, and just drama, drama, dramatic, just silliness.
Well, it's silly, it's overdone, but it's showing that her mind is running 100 miles an hour all the time, no matter where she is, about developing code. She's a code machine. I mean, that's her right. Reason on Earth.
And I think the tattoo gave her some idea, even.
Maybe.
She was like rubbing the tattoo and looking at it in the mirror, and then that's what kind of spawned that little frantic writing.
So next we see one of the most confusing parts at this point in this whole series to me. Joe makes the moves on Travis.
Yep.
Now, at this point, Michelle, do you remember back? Can you remember? Do you remember it being a ploy by Joe, or do you think he was really bisexual?
You know, at the time, it didn't dawn on me that it was a ploy. How would you know that would even work? I mean, you wouldn't know that would even work. If Lulu wasn't so astute, they would have never known. Or it would have never gotten out. And because it's not like Joe went back and told her. So.
Yeah, because Boz doesn't, but it goes way over his head.
Right.
It's pretty shocking. I mean, it is pretty shocking to think Joe would do this. Joe would, like, have sex, homosexual sex, to get a deal done. I actually thought that might be part of his MO, that he'd do anything to get his deal done. But it doesn't make sense that he would do that, really, because he's homosexual. He's bisexual, at least, and he can pick up signs from this guy that he's interested in him. And you know, I don't know if you can do that if you're not tuned that way.
I don't know, but I just think, knowing what I know about Joe now, I wouldn't put it past him at all to do that. Now, whether he would go that far, I don't know, but...
Well, that's the question. Would he go that far? That's a pretty far... That's why they made it hard to figure out. It's a pretty far way to go. Not like he peeked in somebody's notebook while they weren't looking. He did something very, very intimate that would be really hard to do if you weren't really, you know, inclined that way.
Right, right. But we've seen since many times that he is inclined that way. So we know that. But so it takes us
to... Well, this is the first time. So this was why it was hard at this point.
But that's what I'm saying. We still don't know. I mean... We kind of do know.
Well, now we know, but at this point in this episode, we don't know.
Right. We know that he is inclined that way now. But looking back on it, even, I still am not sure whether he did that just to be manipulative, or if there was another... Because, I mean, that would be a pretty big assumption.
Well, how would it kill the deal, though? Too, which would Lulu just get so mad at Cardiff now because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, if picture Lulu is Lou and it's a guy, right? And if Lulu were a man and that was his wife and Joe had went and slept with his wife, would that not kill the deal?
Well, even Nathan or somebody, Boz maybe later on, says Lulu loves money. That's what she loves more than anything, so that wouldn't affect the deal.
Mm-mm, that's not what he said. Later on, he said, Boz brings up that Lulu was insulting and was being insulted. And that's what Nathan says. She has a thick skin. That would not have killed the deal. Somebody sleeping with your partner in your home while you're having the dinner party to spite you?
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. It was something external from the deal would not kill the deal, even sex with the spouse.
Oh, I think sex with the spouse would kill the deal.
Well, maybe it would for you, but I don't know if it would for Lulu. Anyway, they come back with port wine instead of brandy, which was some clue of some sort, I guess. And Boss just says, I'll have a snort. I don't care. I'll have a drink. It's like all over his head.
Yeah, I think the clue was Travis had said he didn't know anything about brandy. And so when they came back, he was like all sophisticated and in the know. So she knew that Joe had went with Travis.
Well, they had to spend some time to do this, too. Right. It wasn't like a 40-second trip to the kitchen. Right. And so the deal's off. They're all outside, and Boz's head's spinning. Like, what the hell just happened? And Joe just says, let's just do it all on our own dime. So Joe did win this little battle of wills with Lulu and killed off the venture capital from her.
Yep.
Now Brian and Gordon drive home in the Gremlin, the Gremlin car. And Gordon fires him after the accident and just walks home.
Yep.
Cameron and Joe talk, and she's stuck, and he sexes her out of it and gets her back on track. And now Boz sleeps at the office. That was kind of an interesting twist.
Yep.
See Boz waking up or sleeping at the office? I can't remember, but
he was going to sleep, yeah.
It's interesting that he kicks Cameron out, and then he does it.
Yep.
And then Gordon sees the little bird again. This is near the end of the episode. Gordon sees the little bird, and he still can't kill it. And Donna takes over and uses the High Plains hardware shovel. That's how the episode got named, I guess. And bam, gets the bird, takes care of the little birdie.
Yep.
And that was it.
That's it.
So 103, High Plains Drifter. High Plains Hardware. I wonder if they got that from High Plains Drifter. Did you ever see that movie?
I didn't.
Clint Eastwood.
I've never even heard of it.
You've never heard of High Plains?
That's embarrassing. No, I haven't.
It's like Clint Eastwood's best spaghetti western movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's a spoiler alert. It's because it's probably like a 1968 movie. He's like some sort of a ghost because he goes to a town, and this town is being threatened by this gang of guys that picks on everybody. Mm-hmm. And so the town mayor and town leaders hire Clint to teach them how to fight back against this gang of people. And he is the High Plains Drifter. It's a very cool old movie, though.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's it for 103. Michelle, how do people reach you on the internet?
On Twitter, at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets. And this was West Coast Project's feed for season one of Halt and Catch Fire.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, see you next week for 104, Close to the Metal.
See you then.